Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
All right, it is 11 minutes after 9 here on the West Coast. It's 11 minutes after 11. Joining me from Highway 2 on the way to Devil's Lake, North Dakota. Normally, it's where he fishes. Gregory Lotus. G-Lo, what is up? How are you?
Oh, it's a nice day here, 60 degrees on the way to maybe 72 today. So It's a good day to go fishing. My son is off school and has a bye week for football, so he's grabbing some leeches and possibly some worms, depending on what they have, and if I'm lucky, maybe a few leopard frogs that are, if they're not too big.
A leopard frog?
Yes, those are the walleye, the big walleye. They like the froggies.
They like. I've never even heard of a leopard frog. What's it look
like?
Yeah,
they're, it's green with black spots, and they're very common around here. But they're a The walleye are kind of lazy, so they want the biggest meal for the least amount of energy. So if they have a choice when they have a nice frog on the menu, they hit that pretty hard.
I mean, the pictures I'm looking at of a leopard frog, they're huge, man.
You got to get them when they're little, unless you fish the catfish, like in the Red River here, that are 30 plus pounds. They'll take down a leopard frog that's close to the size of a fist of a smaller man.
Right. All right. So we're looking for small leopard frogs. Talk about Devil's Lake. Devil's Lake is very close to Rugby, North Dakota.
Yep.
And
yep.
Rugby, for those of you that don't know, is a geographic center of North America.
That's right.
So it's got that going for it. Somebody asked me or sent me an email. Hey, Mac, since Greg has dined at the chef's restaurant, could you ask him what his favorite meal there is?
Oh, without a doubt, it's the lamb. But before the lamb, I have the mushrooms with the Parmesan. It's in a cream sauce with Parmesan cheese, and then he puts it under the salamander so the cheese gets crispy, and then you dip that bread that his wife makes daily. So we have that, and we usually have a salad. My wife likes the salads with the blue cheese and this and that. I'm a Caesar guy because he makes it with real anchovies and stuff, so I go with that. But definitely the lamb is up there. But when I was playing, he used to cut me like a 40-ounce piece of prime rib and try to see if I could finish it, which I was always up to the task. But it definitely hurt the next day.
the lamb, give us the lamb. What's on the plate with lamb?
Well, he does lamb chops. So they are marinated in a light marinade, so it actually doesn't really crush the taste of the lamb. A lot of people, you know, a lot of restaurants try to cover up the meat, and then he also grills it. And they come with like five or so chops. Usually it's four, but sometimes they get five or six on the plate miraculously. And then there's a choice of potato, which I usually go for the whipped with the butter and the cheese potato, and then a choice of veggies. So I don't care what veggie I get. I'm good with, especially now with the farmer's market and the harvest coming to an end. There's a lot of stands and everything, and Kim is always a guy that goes out to the farmer's markets and gets the freshest produce from the local farmers and stuff. So anything that he has is damn good.
No, that's all right. I tell a story about where Kim got mad at me, and I said, could I like Because my son was a waiter, and he said, I don't like when people, like, go off the menu. So I asked him one day, I said, could I, like, make my own? And he looked at me and goes, this is my joint. I do what people want. You can have anything. And I said, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I said, I just want, like, a small piece of ribeye, and I want a small piece, and I want a crab cake or two, and mashed potatoes, and asparagus. He said, done. But I have to say that I was a huge fan of the shrimp.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I was a huge fan of calamari, so we would get that. But I don't know about you, but one of the things as your kids get older, and you have two sons that are big, I mean, they eat everything. I mean,
yeah, and I was disappointed because earlier in the kids' life, you know, they weren't interested in sushi or calamari and this and that. Now, like, to get them three rolls is like $30. And my youngest son, who's a freshman in high school, can crush sushi like it's his job. And so it's difficult to feed everybody, like, within a certain budget. And,
oh, my God.
Yeah. So
it's a joke.
I like the Chinese food places we go to at lunch. And you pay by the pound, so they could put whatever they want in the tray, you know, the chicken and the noodles and different kinds of things. But their palate has expanded tremendously, Max. So the one thing I got to do, though, before we leave is we're stopping at Wendy's or Arby's to order. And since COVID, there's no going inside. I don't know how it is in California. So I'll be ordering shortly. I just want to let you know. Oh, wait, no, hold on. He said he's good for food, so we can wait till Devil's Lake.
Nice.
We can wait till Devil's Lake, yep.
Nice. Hold on, here's another text message. Mac, does Kim serve dessert at his place?
Oh, yes. You guys... the chocolate decadence was nothing else on the menu mattered.
I ate the creme caramel.
No, that's what I did too. But see, for my wife, nothing else mattered but the chocolate decadence. But I would have two creme caramels, and I'd have one while I was there with extra kiwi and strawberries because it came with the caramel sauce. And then I would take one home for the morning. And yeah. I can remember when I woke up one time, and it was like 6 o'clock in the morning. I was like, oh, I get to sit down, no one's up, and have my creme caramel. I went to the fridge, open it up, and I looked over at the counter, and I saw an empty creme caramel tin, and I was like, oh, my God. My kid had come home late and crushed the creme caramel. I was just like, oh, my God, fire and smoke shooting out my ears.
You know what? Let me tell you, and as they get older, you know, it's like you come home and like maybe you got pizza and it was in the refrigerator when you left for work and you're like, yeah, that will taste good when I get home. And you open the fridge and there's nothing. And you look and you're like, those bastards, they did it again. They ate all the leftovers. And you walk out and you're like, hey, where's the pizza? And they look at you and they're like, huh?
Yeah, I fucking hide it now. I do. I hide it. I put it in the vegetable drawer in the back, underneath like a salad pack, or I've seen moms and dads that put Oreo cookies inside like a cracker box or like veggie crisps or something like that. But my kids love all those crackers and dips, like cream cheese, the sour or the chive one, the vegetable one, the salmon one. One of my kids' favorite lunches is like we get the smoked salmon from Sam's Club, the thin stuff, and toast a bagel, put some cream cheese on there, and they pound it with capers and onions, and that's what they have for lunch. And some of their friends look at them like they got six heads, you know, because they're like, you eat salmon with capers? What is capers? but you know what's disappointing, Mac, is like Lawson and Peyton have several friends that will only eat hot dogs or chicken nuggets. You know what I mean? It's like, my God. I think parents give up too early, Mac.
They say
when you're young, it takes you 7 or 8 times to turn something down before you like it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, I mean, my wife was when we were raising the kids, she was obviously reading a lot, first-time mother, and taking what she read along with other things and kind of blending it with her family and my family and how they raised us. But we exposed the kids to so much different food, and I think that's what's helped them, because I think Lawson, the only thing he doesn't like is cucumbers and green peppers. He'll eat some other peppers. But Peyton doesn't like mushrooms, and Olivia doesn't like onions. She's not a big, and eggs. She doesn't like eggs, you know?
Right.
So, yeah. So, it's kind of neat to see, but everything else is open. And, I'm making my famous pasta carbonara on Sunday, and Peyton's having a few teammates over that, two running backs actually from Minnesota, one from Iowa, that are coming over to eat pasta carbonara. So I got the pancetta for that, and I'm excited to make it for him on Sunday.
Now Peyton's going, he's Greg's oldest son, going, he's an offensive lineman at the University of North Dakota. Has, you know, everybody else has now decided to play. Is there any discussion that they will play this fall?
They already came out with the schedule for this spring. They start, I believe, in March for 8 games. And they have the first 3 at home. Then they have a couple away, 1 at home, and then a couple on the road. And they finish with North Dakota State at North Dakota State. So,
ooh,
yeah,
big game.
It's always a big battle there. But the Bison are supposed to play, that's North Dakota State, next week. They scheduled the game against Central Arkansas. It's going to be a blow the doors off kind of deal, but they're trying to get 8,900 fans in the 18,000 seat stadium, which normally they, you know, there's a waiting list for tickets there. But because of COVID and everything else, but the cases are rising so much in Fargo, they don't even know if they'll have that amount of people, Mac.
Wow. All right, so let's back up a little bit. Are you surprised now that what the Pac-12 just said, yeah, we'll play too? Give me your take on this. Is this money? Is this athletic related? Is this COVID related? A mix of all of it?
Well, I definitely think the finance is the driving force to it. But you know, when, like I said, I think last week, when Notre Dame's on TV last Saturday or whatever, the Saturday before,
right,
and they have 10,000, 15,000 people, and high schools are playing. I know that Minnesota just voted last week to reinstate football because they've seen that North Dakota has been playing for 3 weeks without a crazy amount of cases. Like, it didn't explode or anything. And I understand their, you know, their delay or wanting to protect the kids and this and that. But, you know, with the TV contracts that pay a majority of the bills, and people think it's attendance and concessions and stuff, surely that has something to do with it. But the TV contracts is what makes the world go round. That's why the NFL is getting, like, their ratings are off the chart and stuff like that. But there's still not a lot of fans in the stands. But, you know, it gives people something to watch, the commercial value, all that stuff. So, I mean, it's definitely a financial deal, Mac, for sure. And so I think once those Pac-12 and everybody decided to take a look and see what was happening after they looked at it, they said, hey, why not? We'll have a revamped schedule. We'll only play 8 games instead of 11 or 12. They still get the revenue. The kids still get to play. So I think it's a win-win, really. And they have a lot of safeguards, the medical staff and the testing and everything else. So, I mean, like you said, what are we going to do? Sit back and say we give up and lay down? Or are we going to try to find a way to accommodate everything and make it safe for everyone as possible?
Interesting. Interesting stuff. The I got an email here. Mac, I'd be curious what Greg has to say about the things Charles Barkley and Shaquille O'Neal have said in the last 24 hours.
About Black Lives Matter?
As you mentioned earlier, those guys don't say those things without risking Papa John's customers. Charles Barkley has more endorsements than most athletes do. But for some reason, these guys aren't afraid to, in my opinion, speak the truth. I'd be curious to hear what Greg has to say about that. These guys are big, big business guys, Greg. It's almost like both of them feel like the pull of leadership outweighs what their business interests. Because certainly, if you were their agent, you would tell them, hey, tread lightly here, okay? You don't need to say this stuff. You could just let it go to commercial break. Your thoughts on them speaking out like that?
I don't think Charles Barkley's agent or Shaquille O'Neal's agent tell them to say anything. That's number one. They got to where they are because they're polarizing figures, because they take stands on tough issues. And, you know, I'm observant enough to know that I do not know what it was like to grow up African-American or a minority. I don't know what that was like to be pulled over and stuff in certain circumstances. However, logically, I just can't figure out, and when my kids ask or whatever, like, why are they doing this? And they're in other neighborhoods, they're looting, they're burning, they're pillaging, they're destroying things and taking things out. And I'm all for peaceful protests. I think that everyone has the right to do that. Whatever the cause is, this is America, and people died and fought for the right for you to have free speech and stuff. Not without consequences, but you do have the right to do it. But when it comes down to the amount of cops that have been shot for no reason, ambushing people and breaking into stores and like in Minneapolis, the burning down of black-owned businesses and things that people have fought for their whole lives in order to have a store, in order to have a business. I just have a difficult time logically trying to deal with it myself, but also to explain it and struggle to understand what, if you're doing something and you have a goal, what is the end result of what you're doing? How could it be positive? How could it help the message? Instead, I believe it hurts it. So with Charles Barkley and Shaq talking about the Black Lives Matter movement in certain areas, obviously all of it, you can't put a blanket over all of it and say it's not good. But in areas like Louisiana for the last two nights, and there's more people dead and more people shot, injured, fires and everything else, I think that more people would be apt to listen to those two, not just because they played sports, but because they have a platform and they've shown historically they're not afraid to say what they feel. And many, many times they're correct. So, and they have a good point. And so, you know, there's a whole bunch of people that tune into basketball games. Maybe it's someone from Louisiana. Maybe it's someone from Minneapolis, and they might take a stock in what they say and say, hey, this might not be the best way of doing things. So that's what I think, Mac.
You're saying Louisiana, you mean Louisville, right?
Yeah, Louisville, sorry. Yeah.
If we had more leaders like that were not afraid to tell the truth, the country wouldn't be, I think, where it is today. When you hear Charles Barkley say, defund the police is absolutely ridiculous. And then he said this, I can tell you who's not going to defund the police. Rich white people won't defund the police. There'll be police in their neighborhoods. So who are black people going to call? Ghostbusters? Right?
Yeah.
He said, it's ridiculous. So when people hear that, they're like, yeah, who is that guy? You know, and I just, again, we need more people like that aren't afraid. But it seems like, you know, most of them run now because they're afraid of the whole tsunami that is social media. What about
how could we live in a structured environment like a city or a town without law and order?
Well, you're watching it.
Well, there's still, the cops are still showing up stuff, but I'm saying defund the police. So there's no police. And so you get your purse robbed or someone breaks into your house and what? Okay. That sounds good. I mean, I don't understand how we could do that without investigators and people having to answer for their crimes. It would be chaos.
You know what? In my opinion, those people, and I pick on the mayor of Minneapolis, right? Scared to death guy, gets elected during good economic times. So what he wants to do is talk about social programs and things like this. And then stuff gets very difficult and you need somebody who's a leader. And it's not that guy. He's a guy who's lived in a bit of a social worker kind of setting, and he tries to make things better. He hasn't lived in that other side of the town. He hasn't ridden in those squad cars. He hasn't done those things. And all of a sudden it punches him straight in the face, and he's clearly not up to the task. And then they proceed with, we're going to defund the police. We're going to reimagine policing in Minneapolis. And right. And then you have all these do-gooders, and then you hear and you go to people in the inner city and you ask them, what are your thoughts? And like, oh, no, you can't do that because we know who's ultimately going to pay. And that's people that are in heavier crime areas that tend to be the inner city. So we're going to pay the price. It's not going to happen in their suburb. Their cops are going to always be able to get there. And so you watch it and it's just like, I guess people are going to have to die when a social worker shows up, and then the social worker is going to get shot and killed. And you just, it's head shaking. It's like, that's the world according to GARP. It's not the way the world is. And you're watching the shooting and murder numbers go up in New York City. You're watching them go up in Los Angeles. You're watching them go up in all these major cities around the country. Why? Because the police have pulled back?
Yeah.
It's like, who thinks that's going to work?
But so what we're looking at, though, is, you know, we're 40, 50, 60 years old, and a lot of your listeners might be just out of the military, or maybe they're still in it. But I've been asking my kids what they think of this stuff, and I got my son sitting here, and I'd be curious to see what questions you would ask him, because I said, hey, are you willing to give your opinion on this? He said, sure. So if you have a question for him, I would love it, as far as this is concerned, what you or your listeners would have to say if they want to email and just ask him.
All right. I'll ask him one that I asked Colleen. Do you think that you live in a racist nation?
Personally, I think it's there, but I do not see it as far as when I go to school or when I play sports. Obviously, there are kids that make jokes that should not be made. But I do not see it as people look at African Americans at my school differently than themselves.
That's the North Dakota version of Babe Ruth.
That's right.
His name is, he messes around with football. He's a baseball player, okay? Everybody knows this, all right? So, and Lawson Lotus. But we're talking about systemic, and again, Lawson, there's assholes everywhere, right? And they do stupid things. But what we're talking about is systemic racism, that the system is designed to hold back somebody of color, somebody, you know, by gender. And so do you see systemic racism? Because I was reading something. The Secretary of Defense had gone out to the Pacific, and he said, well, look, here's what I'm pleased to report that I've learned. He said, I hear stories of individual experiences with other individuals, but I don't, what I've yet to see is somebody to be able to substantiate for me this charge of systemic racism. So do you see the same thing, Lawson, or do you see systemic racism?
I mean, I feel like it's impossible not to see it when you see it on the news reoccurring every week, that there's new victims that are being shot or killed or injured by policemen. But there's also other cases that happen to white or Caucasian people that people turn their heads away from. Like, it's hard to recognize, but it happens both ways. It's just that people, when they don't like something, they want to look away from other things that happen that might be similar to that problem.
When Do you feel like you can have, hold on, I'll read the email. Mac, I'd be curious, does Greg's son, and then he, in parentheses, it says, I think his name is Lawson. Does he feel like he can discuss these issues openly? Because a lot of people don't. A lot of people are afraid to do what Shaquille O'Neal and Charles Barkley have done, which is to stand up and say, hey, here's what I think, and suffer the criticism that goes with that. So do you feel like you can have an honest conversation, Lawson?
I do, because I believe that I'm a level-headed person enough to where I will not express myself in ways where I cannot defend myself. And I can make a very I'm very articulate, and I can back up an argument when I make it. So I believe when I open my mouth to speak on a subject or topic that's as tough and it's so complex as the Black Lives Matter movement and systemic racism, I believe I can back that up no matter what I say.
So are you sure you're biologically linked to Greg Lotus? Who is...
Maybe he takes after his mother.
I don't understand what's
going
on.
Yeah, he could use big words and stuff. I don't know who this kid is.
I know. So, Lawson, who's the fisherman of the family?
As far as the siblings go and I, it's probably Peyton right now. He's got to be the top fisherman in the family. If you go by the years and stuff, Pops got us by a little bit. Just a little bit, though. We're getting there.
Who's the best fisherman? Age, everything aside, who's the best fisherman?
I'd have to go my grandpa, or we call him Gigi.
Gigi.
Just finds a way to catch fish. I don't know how he does it.
Does he?
Yeah.
No kidding. Well, that's good. That's good. Here's another question. Mac, how old is Greg's son? He sounds on the mature side for a high school kid. Lawson, how old are you?
I turned 15 in July.
You don't sound like your average 15-year-old, are you?
He doesn't look like an average 15-year-old. He's a little over 6 feet, almost 6 foot one, and weighs about 220. So. He never started his first of all, he's the only freshman, I could toot his horn for a little bit, the only freshman the last 20 to 25 years to make the varsity football team at Red River. And then he never started his first game, but he did unseat a senior and has started ever since for the Red River Rough Riders as a freshman. So he's doing all right. He's doing all right.
What's been the most, has that been awkward? I mean, because there's a little bit of there's a social ladder as well as a performance ladder on any team that any of us ever play on, Lawson. Talk to us about trying to beat somebody that's 3 years your senior and been in that program for 3 years. Is there a way that you have to go about that on a daily basis?
I feel like I need to talk less because there is that different social standard between a senior and a freshman. I just have to go to practice and grind it out every day and show the coaches and the offensive line and other players that are seniors that I can play with them and I belong on that field every Friday.
So how's that working out for you? Is that what's happening? Do you feel comfortable like you've proved it? Have you been accepted by the other offensive linemen and the other players on offense?
I feel like I have because, between drills and stuff and practice, we just have normal conversations and they invite me to go out to eat with them. I don't feel like if I beat one of them out, they're just going to turn their head away from me or not pay any attention. I feel like most of them are supportive, even though they might see less playing time on the field every Friday.
I think what's tough, Mac, too, is seeing Law, all his buddies that he grew up with playing third, fourth, fifth, and sixth grade football, seventh and eighth, they're on the freshman team, which play on Monday. And he's gone to watch them, but he's not dressed. He's not on the field. He's not practicing with those guys. And he's kind of by himself when it comes to being out there on Friday as far as his peer group is concerned. But he still hangs out with those guys socially and stuff. But it's hard because they don't have that thing in common where, you know, like, hey, do you see this at practice? And wasn't that funny and stuff? Because he's playing on a different level.
Yeah, when you read stories about Wayne Gretzky growing up, that was one of the hardest things for him, and it's something he had to get used to was, you know, I mean, he was a young kid playing with men. And
yeah, 15 when he started playing with 18 and 20-year-olds, yeah.
Right, and so when you have a little bit of talent, that's a common road. Here's another email. Mac, I'd be curious about the topic that is most discussed by high schoolers. Is it COVID? Is it the racial events of this past summer? What's most talked about by people at school? So in school, Lawson, what is does one of those topics dominate more than others?
I mean, there are obviously topics around my friend groups that dominate, such as sports, COVID situations, or just the everyday topics that you, like, when you watch the news, or, like, if there's a big event that happened, we just talk about, like, the everyday things that you might hear outside of school or at your house, maybe.
Got it. The, what's the most difficult topic that you guys have tackled?
I'd have to see it's got to be the Black Lives Matter movement, because there's a lot of different opinions, but it's hard to listen to my friends or other people that have spoken on the subject and I'm just around when they don't have a statement that's supported by facts or evidence behind that statement. Because I don't want to be that guy that's just being the devil's advocate constantly. I just have to hold my tongue a little bit and just listen.
And it's hard too, Mac, because we live in a what Mr. Earl Strindon calls a homogeneous society where there isn't a lot of color in Grand Forks, North Dakota. I mean, Peyton and Lawson play on teams where there is African American, there is Hispanic influence there, you know, but otherwise in a normal class, you might not see someone of color or that is different from you because it's a lot of Norwegian and German and stuff. So what we've tried to do is take the kids and travel and go places or, you know, showing them like my friends that I played with that are welcome at the house and have dinner and stuff to show them that, you know, it's about the person and not about anything else. And that's where someone should be judged, by their actions, their words and their deeds, and not by the color of their skin or what group they come from.
You know, interesting. Because it is a challenge, right, when you're trying to raise your kids to be respectful. And I'll tell you a story about Patrick. Patrick came home, and he was probably in sixth grade or something like that. And he used the word greaser. Yeah, I can't remember what he said, but I just froze. I said, what did you just say? And he said, well, one of my friends said, you know, that guy, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I said, do you know where that word comes from? And he could tell he'd done something wrong, right?
Yeah.
And I said, okay, before I annihilate you, all right, I want you just to go look that term up and then come back and tell me about it. And he did. And he comes back and he said, I'm sorry. And I said, no, I said, one, don't use terms like that to describe anybody. And if you've never heard it, don't use it till you go look it up. That's life advice, okay?
Yeah.
I said, but you know how we feel in this house. And he says, I know. And I said, okay, so now you understand, yes? He said, yes. He said, I'm sorry. I said, no. But you know, it's when it is a challenge when you do grow up and there's not too many trees branches coming off the tree trunk. It's all, you know, it's everybody's the same. I mean, what the largest minority in the region is Native Americans, right?
Oh, without a doubt.
Right. And so, I mean,
but see, that's part of being a parent here is trying to expose your kids to different cultures. My daughter was dating someone that's Iranian. And she came home and said to me, "Oh, Dad, you should have seen this basmati rice and this food and this food." I said, "Yeah, I grew up in Thunder Bay with someone that was of Iranian and Persian descent." And so I said, "Did this have honey on it?" And she goes, "How do you know all this?" I said, "I was exposed to it." And I think the one thing about food that the kids love is they can be exposed to a culture, even going to the restaurant right. or tasting something that's different. And it opens up a dialogue. And what I'm proud of Lawson and Olivia and Peyton is they're always open to trying new things and talking about different groups and stuff, because that's what I think the problem is. And you could see it with Lawson's friends or Peyton's friends or Olivia's friends, that some of them, they don't even want to be open to the fact that there's another side or another, you know, portion of the population that does things and stuff. And they're just kids the same way that they are, but it seems a world away, even though they live in the same city.
Yeah, it's funny to relate this back to food. I remember when both my sons, you know, were dishwashers for Kim, and they were raised, you know, to, you know, eat everything on their plate and to try everything that got put on their plate. And so they were decent. They were good eaters when they went down there. Well, yeah. Once they went down there, that like blew the doors off everything. I mean, they come home and they're talking about bus tub dining. And I'm like, "What's that?" And they're like, "Well, you know, a lot of people don't eat, you know, eat their food, so like it comes back in the kitchen, and we like, you know, the rule is you got to cut a layer off that they ate ate near, and then we eat it." And they're like, "Oh, we fight over the oysters," and you're listening, and all the different things that they started eating down there, and which just opened their eyes to, "Yeah, I'll try that." And I think, you know, it's interesting one of the things Lawson said about being able to. You don't want to be that guy that calls bullshit on everybody. But when you get raised in a house where you have to substantiate your argument and you, yeah. as opposed to, "Oh, well, that's just what I think." Like, no, wait yeah. a minute. I want you to tell me, explain that to me. And when you grow up like that, and you grow up trying stuff and you grow up open to ideas and cultures. I mean, to me, that's raising inquisitive, intellectually open young people that I think are at some point in their lives will make a great contribution to their community. And to me it's the coolest part of being a parent is seeing your kids begin to be able to participate in those conversations and have grown up approach to it. Let me read you.
Well, I was gonna say, Mac, that I've had on several occasions, like listening to Lawson, whether it be talk to his mother or his sister or brother, and they say something, and he says, "Where did you get that? Like, can you tell me, like, how is that true, and where is that from?" And they're like, "Oh, I heard it on, or I read it on the news and stuff." And it's like The Onion, or did you look at it from a journal, or whatever? So he calls BS on it, and it's great. And obviously, we do our fair share of BSing in our house and having fun. But when it comes to a discussion that's worthwhile, you know, for him to intelligently speak about something, and that's why it's great to help him with his homework and see that he has to footnote things. It can't just BS stuff in a paper. It's got to be footnoted. It's got to be cited. It's got to do that. So I think that's kind of getting lost right now, though.
And oh, my God.
You look at all the bullshit sites that are out there, TMZ and blah, blah, blah. Everyone's quick to write a story, but they don't know the whole truth, and you know, which happens with a lot of arrests. And it sounds like the cops just got out of the car and started mowing people down, and when in reality it wasn't the case. And there's so much that goes into stuff, and to be able to speak intelligently, you got to be able to back it up. And I think that's one thing that Lawson has learned, especially when he calls out bullshit on his friends.
Well, you know, it's interesting. To me, that's the collision you've seen in the country this week. And you saw the Attorney General from Kentucky stand up and lay out the case that was laid before the grand jury and talk about, you know, what he could talk about in public this is the sequence of events. A lot of it, you know, relative to Breonna Taylor, that we had not heard before, that they, that I believe, if I'm not mistaken, a no-knock warrant was issued, but they knocked before they went in. They announced themselves before they went in. They go in. I mean, all this stuff. Well, so there's this clash between the law, evidence, facts, truth, and social media, which is the world according to GARP. You know, this fantasy land that, that exists in social media. But there's so many people, I think, that believe that what they read in social media is true. You have this collision and explosion. And are we going to be a nation that's ruled by what people say on social media because they want that to be true? Or at the end of the day, do facts, evidence, the truth, and the quintessential American way of doing things, does that matter? And it just seems to be such a great shock to people when those things collide and it's not the way it appeared on social media. And that's why, to me, it took great moral courage. And I know they do it as a rule. They tend to be pretty honest dudes, but Charles Barkley and Shaquille O'Neal, they know what's coming behind it. They're going to get called sellouts. They're going to get called Uncle Toms. They're going to get called all the things that black people get called when they're not black enough for other people that have a different opinion. And so to me, it's been an interesting week. And I don't – let me ask, what changes that? I mean, do you see what's going to change it in the future? This is a fight that's going to go on in this country for a long time. And my fear is that we're going to see some really bad violence that happens because of it. Because I don't see leaders that stand up and say, look, right, you have the right to peacefully assemble. You don't have the right to riot. I'm going to put an end to this. And I don't see national leaders, both Republican and Democrat, that say, you don't have any right to burn that city down. And so in the absence of that, you know, you watch this craziness. And at some point, you know, something really bad's going to happen. I just wonder, do you see, and I'm not a pessimistic guy, but I am on this subject. How do you see, you look into your crystal ball, where does the nation go with this shit, this road that we're on?
Well, number one, first and foremost, without a doubt, I believe it starts at home. And that may seem like a simplistic answer, but when you instill morals and ethics within your kids so that they're able to, when there's a mob mentality, and you know how many studies have been done on mob mentality and how everyone kind of just goes with things despite what they've been taught. But if they have the fortitude and the strength that they've grown up with to say, hey, I'm not going to do this stuff. I'm going to walk away, or I'm going to choose to protest in a different manner, or whatever the case may be, then I really think it starts at home in the family dynamic. Now, whether the family dynamic involves a mother and father, or two mothers, two fathers, or a single mother, or a grandmother, whatever the case may be. But, Mac, when did it start being okay just to say that I want to do this because it makes me feel good? Or this is what I believe, so therefore it's right. I mean, like, there is consequences to your actions, but nowadays...
I disagree with you, because you and I have had these conversations about raising kids.
Yeah.
Most parents, consequences? Really?
But see, that's what I'm saying. That's where it starts at home. And then that's... You're asking me, how could it be changed? And it could be changed by... starting at home and actually having, whether it be curfews or having to do chores or having expectations for grades and stuff like that, playing sports to keep kids in a certain group and make them have discipline and all this kind of stuff. So, like I'm not going to throw the white flag in and say, hey, I give up and we're screwed, because there's always a way to correct stuff and help things out. And it has to start with a single action or single deed and then proceed from there, because one person could change another person, and that person could go on to change two people. So it could domino from there. So aside from that, other than putting everyone in jail and having harsher penalties and this and that, I don't even think that's going to do shit, because they're already doing it. You know, I don't know what else to say.
Yeah. No, I don't. I'm waiting for leaders to stand up, and they're not. It's pathetic.
Don't hold your breath.
Yeah, no kidding. The all right, I will let you go here. But one final question, Lawson. Who's going to catch the most fish today?
It's going to be me.
That's my boy right there.
There you go. There you go. The and when do you guys? When do you play again, Lawson?
We play next Friday.
And who do you play?
We play Fargo Cheyenne.
Fargo Cheyenne. What is that? I don't even know that.
Yeah, that's a new school there. Fargo's blowing up, so they had to build a new school.
No kidding. Where is it?
Oh, it's crazy.
What part of this town? South?
It's on the south side of town, yep, by Davies, close to Davies.
Yeah, that's where your boy Mike Rarick lives.
Oh, yeah.
He's a big-timer. He's a big-timer.
Oh, yeah.
All right. My guests today have been Greg and his son Lawson, who are on their way to go fishing in Devil's Lake. All right, what's the limit at Devil's Lake right now?
You can get 5 walleye and 5 northern, and then 20 white bass if you want them. But we throw mostly the northerns and the white bass back. It's strictly a walleye fest if we're gonna eat some fish tonight for sure.
The what about the wind? Normally the wind can do a little can create some issues on Devil's Lake. Are you getting on a boat? Were you fishing off a dock?
We got in the fall, late fall, those fish congregate near the bridges where there's current.
Yep.
So we're fishing off a bridge today, and I've done historically well in the late fall, even later than this. But there's big fish that come in those areas because of all the bait and stuff, and they're putting on the feed bag before the slim pickings of winter.
All right. Well, look, first of all, thanks for doing this today. Lawson, great to have you on All Marine Radio, and all the best of luck to you and your football team. And also, I know you're a smart guy, so keep up the good work in school and keep doing good stuff. Greg, always a pleasure. Thank you.
All right, Mac. Talk to you soon.
All right, bud. Lotus, you bet. The Lotus family here on a Friday edition of All Marine Radio. Yeah, you don't hear most 15-year-olds like that, right? But I will tell you this. Lawson, always a little bit of a different kid. When he was young, you know, I haven't been around him I left North Dakota 10 years ago. When he was young, he was always a fired-up kid. He had an older brother that was beating his ass. And he was a tough kid, and he wanted to play, and he wanted to do good. But Greg, you know, I wouldn't see it. I just saw him as a little kid. But Greg used to tell me, yeah, he's like wicked, gifted, kind of smart. And so you heard a little bit of that here today in his answers. Mac, how's the chef? I don't know. I haven't talked to the chef in about a week or so. So I've got to give – I will give him a call right after the show and get an update for everybody. So anyway, on this Friday, in a week that has been marked by pessimism here on All Marine Radio, thanks for listening. Alex Hollings will join us on Monday. Have a great weekend. And get out there and vote. And most importantly, when you can, encourage leaders to be leaders. We miss them. Into this leaderless vacuum of the nation is stepping, you know, a tempest of violence, and that never ends well. So we need the adults to show up and do what they're supposed to do. But if past performance is any indication of future returns, stand by for more violence. On that pessimistic note, we'll end the week. Have a great weekend. We'll see you Monday. And most importantly, you know, don't be afraid to change somebody's life. There's no experience like it. So all you got to do is listen. And then look at somebody and say, hey, do you got a minute? Could I talk to you? And then you could help them live the high life. And in doing that, guess who else gets to live that? You do. Have a great weekend. All Marine Radio, out.